Welcome to April 20 Shabbat study. And we're going to be looking at a couple key texts from our parasha today in Leviticus. And we're going to start with some prayer. You too, Stella. Be good. No, it's okay. Lord, thank you for bringing us all here. I pray you would fill us with your spirit and let us see things in your word we haven't seen before, and show us how to apply them to our lives and our practical situations. And we pray that you would cover us where we've done wrong and purify us that we could do the right thing. And just let your spirit be present in all of today's worship, this Bible study, and the worship and the sermon, and all the interactions that go on between the members here and the visitors and everyone. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
So, it's kind of interesting this week for me because I've been thinking.
Oh, that's dangerous.
That is dangerous. It's good. And I've been thinking about how important it is not to slander people. And I happen to be reading in Isaiah 29. You're welcome to look there really quick. There's a whole bunch of little connections in my life that I'll state, that all kind of culminate into seeing how God's working, hopefully not just in me, but in all of us.
Even your brother.
My brother. Even my sister. And my parents. So I'm going to get Isaiah. Actually, one of you has it in English. Isaiah 29. Let's start in verse 13 and go, actually, well, no, let's just skip to the more important part.
15?
Yeah, 15 down to 21. If someone could read Isaiah 29:15-21 for me, please.
Woe unto them that seek deep to hide their counsel from the Lord, and their works are in the dark, and they say, Who seeth us, and who knoweth us? Surely your turning of things upside down shall be esteemed as the potter's clay. For shall the work say of him that made it, He had made me not? Or shall the thing framed say of him that framed it, He had no understanding? It is not yet a very little while, and Lebanon shall be turned into a fruitful field, and the fruitful sheep field shall be esteemed as a forest. And in that day shall the deaf hear the words of the book, and the eyes of the blind shall see out of obscurity and out of darkness. The meek also shall increase their joy in the Lord, and the poor among men shall rejoice in the Holy One of Israel. For the terrible one is brought to naught, and the scorner is consumed, and all that watch for iniquity are cut off, that make a man an offender for a word, and lay a snare for him that reproveth in the gate, and turn aside the just for a thing of naught.
All right. Maybe I'll also get another version for that last verse.
Because
it doesn't pop out to my ears quite the same. Let's see. Verse 21.
Those who with a word make a man out to be guilty, who ensnare the defender in court, and with false testimony deprive the innocent of justice.
Wow. In court. That makes it sound official. It actually says at the gate. Okay. So we know.
Yeah, but
the gate of a city is where legal transactions take place. But I just mentioned at the gate because I know as Christians, a lot of us think, well, you know, I'm not in court. That's like another level. And so in our day-to-day interactions, it's a little different. And I'd like to say our day-to-day interactions are included.
Did you see what the poet did with his verbs at the end?
Yes. Which part are you talking about?
Velamochiach b'sha'ar yekoshun vayatu vatohu tzadik vayatu. It's a poetic style. It's not that common, but you, all through here, he's talking about the future, about Lebanon. Then he's shifted and talked about things that always happen, kind of habitual. But the very last clause, he threw it into the past and said they
led astray.
They pervert the
righteous.
The righteous with chaos or with
nothing. This word tohu vavohu is what's in creation before God makes sense out of everything.
The disorder.
The vast and void nothingness. Chaotic nothingness. And it usually comes together, but there are a couple times tohu comes alone. And also, I thought you were referring to the poetry of vayatu vatohu.
That was what I was referring to.
No, I'm saying there's alliteration there, not just the verb tense.
Ah.
Vayatu vatohu.
And also, the other verb, yekoshun, uses an older long form. Anyway,
yes.
That's just to say that the poet here, as he winds up that little paragraph, he waxes poetically.
And
as
you know from Isaiah, Isaiah is a supreme poet. And most of prophecy, if you're reading it in another language, you may not realize it, but it is poetry. And that's why it's very powerful as it delivers its message. But what struck me here is this first little line. You make a person to be a sinner with a word.
Mm-hmm.
And how important that is. This is a description of evil. And I know, you know, sin is sin. We all know that. And sin separates us from God, whether it's small or big. But the truth is, there are different levels of sin in the sense that how much it affects people. And subjectively, we categorize sin. We rank them. You know, there's murder. And I think most of us would put that way up at the top. Right? What are some other huge sins you would put at the top with murder?
Adultery.
Okay, that's another one from Ten Commandments.
Well, I'm sure you're going for it. Slander is right up there.
That's right. That's exactly what I'm going for. And I'll read you a little thing. Where did I put it in my notes? Okay. In the tractate, I'm quoting in English, the Babylonian Talmud records teachings of ancient sages. And if you look at Erchin 15, page B, each page has two sides, A and B, it mentions that for three transgressions, okay, so three sins, one forfeits his portion in Olam Haba, in the world to come. All right, who can guess what those three sins are?
Slander.
Not yet. Well.
Murder.
Murder.
Adultery.
Adultery. And idol worship. Right, the big to not worship God. So those are all so far from the Ten Commandments. And then it says, okay, so murder, adultery, and idol worship. And that Lashon Hara is equivalent to all three. So you have like that three, even four pattern that we find also in Amos. So they're saying, yeah, it's true. We have the rank murder, adultery, and idol worship. Those are big, huge sins. But equivalent to all three of those is Lashon Hara. What is Lashon Hara?
A bad tongue.
A bad tongue? Or a tongue of the bad? Of the evil? Lashon is a tongue. But this is a rabbinic phrase, and it's actually never found exactly like that in the Bible, in the Hebrew Bible. But in Psalm 34:14, we do have Netzor leshoncha me'ra, guard your tongue from evil, and your lips from speaking lies, is the next section. So we have Lashon Hara as the rabbinic phrase. We have a kind of a similar word in Psalm 34:14. But how this is understood is developed. So Lashon Hara becomes, it's actually a little less than slander, but it would include slander. It's any derogatory information with the intent to malign someone. So this could be true information or false information. And that's a key difference. So Lashon Hara, that's pretty easy. Because you could just tell someone, hey, I think so-and-so is ugly. That's derogatory information. I don't know if that could be true or false, it's subjective. But then, Hotza'at Shem Ra, to come up with a bad name for someone, that's the next run up, because that would be slander, or what we could call disinformation. You're telling it as information, but it is not true. So that would be even worse. Okay, so then the next little key in my week was thinking about these, reading Isaiah 29, and then, you know, Lashon Hara, as I mentioned, it's never, this rabbinic idiom is never found in the Hebrew Bible, but there is a verse that all hinges on, and does anyone know where that verse is, what it is? That they would say prohibits any harmful speech. It's in Leviticus, that's your hint. And surprisingly enough, it is in our parasha. So I thought, how cool is that? Leviticus 19:16. Lo telech rachil be'amecha. Lo ta'amod al dam re'echa ani Adonai. And there's some more. In fact, I think we'll read a little bit from Leviticus 19. But this is one of the verses that all of these concepts are pinned on. So it says, don't go around, rachil, don't go around gossiping among your people. And don't stand, you could say stand idle, to interpret that, on the blood of your friend or your neighbor. What do you have? Someone else read another translation for verse 16.
You shall not go about as a talebearer.
Talebearer, okay.
Nor take a stand against the life of your neighbor.
Nor take a stand what?
Against the life of your neighbor.
Against the life of your neighbor.
You must not go about as a slanderer among your people. You must not stand idly by when your neighbor's life is at stake.
Okay, that's filled in some blanks for us. Don't stand by when your neighbor's life is at stake, and don't go around slandering.
I wonder if the rabbis, though, didn't line up
the two together.
Didn't take the two together so that going around slandering would be as if you were standing over the blood of your neighbor.
Exactly.
Meaning that slandering is as evil as if you were killing somebody.
That's what I was going to mention as well, is they both come in the same verse, as two halves of the same verse. So it's natural to interpret them in light of each other to see a connection. And you're putting slandering or walking around gossiping, that sounds a little less, or a little better than slander maybe, but it could be the same. You're putting that on the same level as being guilty of some kind of bloodshed. It's not a guilt of actually committing the murder yourself, but it is on par because you're not stopping it, or you're aiding it, or somehow inspiring it. I was doing little searches online just to see what's out there and what people are saying, and I ended up, where was I? Torah.org. And they were talking about Lashon Hara. And so they mentioned, you know, Lashon Hara being the damaging, it could be physically damaging, financially damaging, socially damaging, or stress-inducing communication. That pretty much covers a lot. That would be Lashon Hara.
Well, that means that the news can't be broadcast.
Right. Well, there are exceptions. When you must say information to save someone else from harm, then there would be a good time to do it. But unless there is benefit in you sharing information, you shouldn't share it. Otherwise, it's considered sin. So let's say there was a reason why I should share this derogatory information, you know, then it's okay. But if I'm just sharing it and it doesn't have any benefit to the hearer or to another situation, then I should just keep it to myself. And that's in the case of information is true. Obviously, in the case of information is false, I shouldn't share any disinformation. But they were making the distinction between Lashon Hara and then the Rechilut is any communication that generates animosity between people. So back to the example of, you know, I tell someone I think so-and-so is ugly, that's one comment. But now that person goes and tells a person, hey, you know, so-and-so has called you ugly, they have generated animosity between me and that person. And that's what we call Rechilut. Or
Lashon Hara.
Also Lashon Hara. But it's another stage in the link. Like if you had just heard that bad comment and let it stop, the one who made the comment would still be guilty of their comment, but at least, you know, it dies where it was heard. But if you choose to go spread that and gossip, then you've just made it worse. Like starting the fire. Okay, the other connection I was thinking of last week in this study, we talked about, what did we talk about last week? Who remembers? You guys weren't here. You weren't here either, so. At least two people, don't be put on the spot or anything. I'll remind us all. We talked about leprosy in the context of Naaman's leprosy in the Haftarah portion. And there was also portions in Leviticus about leprosy. And there was somebody who wrote a book called Sefer Chepetz Chaim, the Book of the Desire of Life. And they came up with 31 mitzvot that are about your speech. So 31 commandments that have to do with how we talk and conduct our words. And I have not listed all 31 this morning, but I was intrigued that several of them were coming from our portion from Leviticus. So I was going to read that. But then also, the one I want to mention briefly now was Deuteronomy 24:8. Do you remember Deuteronomy 24:8? It reminds you. Of course, Deuteronomy is Mishneh Torah. It's a repetition of the Torah. So it's kind of like a sermon where they're retelling you the law in a different framework to kind of pinpoint things.
This is level C Shema, isn't it?
Well,
I don't remember. I'm just
I think it's, well, they were listing it as Lashon Hara, but it could be both. That's kind of like a fine distinction in some cases. Deuteronomy 24, 8 and 9, it says to remember. So clearly it's referring to a story you know from the Torah. Let me get there so I don't misquote it. 24:9. Zachor et asher asa Adonai Elohecha leMiriam baderech betzedcha miMitzrayim. So remember what God did to Miriam on the way out of Egypt. And then, oh, and that refers to the command right above it. If you look at verse 8. Hishamer. So watch out, keep, pay attention. Benega hatzara'at, with leprosy. And we discussed leprosy isn't just Hansen's disease, it is some kind of skin disease, and it may be inclusive of several skin diseases that occasionally are used as punishment by God. Certainly not in every case, has v'chalila, but there are several stories, like Gehazi's story we looked at last week, and King Uzziah and Miriam in the Bible, who received leprosy as a divine punishment. And it says, so hishamer me'od ve'la'asot kechol asher yoru etchem ha'kohanim ha'levi'im. Make sure you really pay attention to do everything that the Levitical priests tell you, instruct you, kasher tivitim, as I commanded them. And the I here is Moses talking. Tishmeru la'asot. Guard it, to keep it. And then he says, remember what God did to Miriam. And so he's referring, he says, you better take me seriously. Like, I have authority from God to instruct you. And so take it seriously, because remember what happened to Miriam. So we mentioned this last week, just for the sake of memory. Who remembers where Miriam's story is?
And she and Aaron are complaining about Moses and thinking right. that they should be...
She and Aaron are complaining about Moses. Where can I read about this story?
Exodus? Numbers?
Numbers 12. And it starts out, Vatadaber Miriam ve'Aaron b'Moshe. Vatadaber, and she spoke. So it seems to me that Miriam is the main instigator here, and indeed she's the one who gets the immediate punishment. Aharon is like tacked in there as well. But this isn't just speaking, it's vatedaber be, right? Speaking against. And speaking against. So this is interpreted as lashon hara, when you speak against someone. What did Miriam in this selection, what was her complaint against Moses?
His wife was a Cushite.
Yeah.
Perdón. Hablo español.
Like, so? What's the problem with that? I have no idea what the problem with that is, and I don't know what Miriam thought was the problem with that. But clearly, she thought it was a problem. Now, did Moses have a Cushite wife? What does it say? Let me read it for you. Okay, so she spoke against Moses. Al odot ha'isha ha'kushit asher lakach, ki isha kushit lakach. So yes, she spoke against him because of the Cushite wife he took, because he had taken a Cushite wife. So it's true. What she said is true in the sense that he took a Cushite wife. I don't know, you know, again, I don't know what she thought was wrong with that, but...
parentheses here says before he had married an Ethiopian woman.
Right, that's their church. Cushite. Their Kush is the area under Egypt. It's modern-day Sudan. If you want to extend it eastward, it can include Ethiopia. But just the direct, when you think Kush, think of Sudan.
Ethiopia was the Greek name. Kush was the Hebrew name. And Nubia was the Roman name. Mm-hmm. all of it is just everything south of Egypt. When you get down to Aswan and go south, that's the land of Cush, or the land of Ethiopia, or the Nubian land.
Right.
Is this a foreign wife? I mean,
so you could say her problem was that it wasn't an Israelite. Of course, his wife Tzipora wasn't Israelite either, a Midianite. But
I think there was another Cushi name. I think the name was there was a tribe down in Edom that had the name Cush also.
So you could say that way that it's talking about Tzipora, because Midian is near Edom? Maybe.
Don't know.
Maybe. So in either case, it's a foreigner, not an Israelite, and so maybe that's Miriam's big complaint. Like, here you are, the leader of the Israelites out of Egypt, and you're married to a foreigner. Like, what's your problem? So whatever a complaint is, it's based on a true fact that he was married to this person. Not necessarily true that there was a problem with that. But I just point that out in terms of our definition of Lashon Hara. So she gets punished for speaking against Moses. And it's interesting, if you want to read that in Greek, Deuteronomy 24:8. Let's see if I still have that in mind. Oh, I switched to Isaiah.
It says Moses and Aaron.
Moses, you mean Miriam and Aaron?
I'm sorry. Miriam and Aaron.
Oh, wait, no, it's not that one. It's, sorry. Not the Deuteronomy one. Numbers 12:8. Okay. When Moses gives a reply to Miriam and Aaron, I guess Miriam had to speak against Moses to someone, so maybe she spoke to Aaron. I don't know. So God gives a reply, and he says, "Mouth to mouth I speak in him," referring to Moses. Oh, wait, is that referring to Moses? Yeah. Because earlier it contrasted to other people. And umar'eh, and a vision, and not in riddles, in the sense not riddles alone, like he actually sees. And the face or the picture of God he sees. And why did you not fear to speak against my servant Moses? So there's a sense, usually we think of fearing the Lord. I like the connection of, because they fear the Lord, they fear to speak, they should have feared to speak against his servant.
Do you have the reference? Because it's only once in Torah that you have that idiom, Lehotzi Shemra. Do you know where that is?
It might be in one of the ones we're going to look at. I can't remember. But let's just finish this one, and then we can look at it. I thought it was interesting. I'll just read the last thing in Greek. Diati uk efovethete katalalese kata tu therapondos mu moise. So why don't you fear katalalese, to speak against? That same word. And that's a word we're going to see in our New Testament section as well, in James, to speak against. So why did you fear to speak against? This is what I would say is Lashon Hara. And I also thought it was interesting to call Moses, the servant of God, Therapon. Therapon.
Ah.
A healer. A healer and a servant. And it's interesting because if Miriam's punishment is leprosy, she will need to be healed. And that whole, there might be some interesting interpretation going on there. Okay. So, according to Jewish tradition, because of this passage in Deuteronomy 24:8 that refers to the Numbers 12 incident, one of the punishments for Lashon Hara is leprosy. And leprosy is a serious punishment. because it's something that without God you can't be cured from. So that is this big example that we're supposed to take heed from. So let's just go, since we're on that word already, katalali, or in Hebrew, ledaber be, to speak against. Let's just look at James 4:11 really quick. James 4:11 and 12. That's taken from our Narkis New Testament portion for this week. So who wants to read that for us?
Do not speak evil of one another, brethren. He who speaks evil of a brother and judges his brother speaks evil of the law and judges the law. But if you judge the law, you're not a doer of the law, but a judge.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. So again, the same word. Me katalalite. Do not speak against each other. Brothers. So brothers, he's talking to us, in the sense of believers in the Lord Jesus. Don't speak against each other. The one who speaks against each other, or his brother, is a judge of his brother and speaks against the law, which is a very interesting... Have you ever looked at that? To speak against your brothers, to speak against the law? Not quite sure what he was meaning by that. Speak against Torah. But I do understand the contrast, that if you're speaking against it, you're not doing it. And the idea is that we do God's law, not that we're speaking against it. And further on, James makes it clear, you know, who are you to judge? And if you look in verse 12, there's only one who has given the law and is the judge, and who is able to save or to apolese, to destroy. And this lingo to me is also reminiscent of our parasha in Leviticus, because there are lists given and the punishment, if you do this, you will be destroyed. And so it's God who is this one who is able to save or destroy. So who are you who can judge your neighbor? So with that, let's go back and let's read some of these verses in Leviticus 19. And let's start maybe we'll start where we started this morning. Okay. First of all, let me just say, Leviticus 19, we call it the holiness code. It starts out saying, be holy because God's holy. And then it's kind of a retelling of a lot of the Ten Commandments, but it adds in random things. And the other thing is that it tends to mix ceremonial law with moral law that some people differentiate between, but, you know, law is law. But there's this interesting mixture to show you that, you know, if you take God seriously, you take it all seriously. And this is coming from priests. Priests wrote Vayikra, so they're very aware of ceremony as well as morality. Okay, so let's read from maybe verse 11. Maybe read two verses at a time. Do you have a Seth? Do you have English?
Yeah. Okay. You shall not steal, nor deal falsely, nor lie to one another. And you shall not swear by my name falsely, nor shall you profane the name of your God. I am the Lord.
Okay, so that's quite reminiscent of the Ten Commandments. We have stealing and speaking, don't take my name in vain, and don't lie. So we have kind of a combination of those things together. Go ahead and do verse 13. Someone?
You must not oppress your neighbor or commit robbery against him. You must not withhold wages of the hired laborer overnight until morning.
Okay, so interesting to me is this the sequence of not stealing and not lying and then no oppression, and how the ramifications of what you say are very important, and they can have serious consequences for other people. And especially in this case, they're talking about people who are under you, let's say the people you hire to work for you. And so if you are dishonest about that, it's a very big deal. Okay, so verse 14.
Do not curse the deaf or put a stumbling block in front of the blind, but fear your God. I am the Lord.
Okay, several times in this chapter and later in chapter 25 in Leviticus, we have fear the Lord. Fear your God, I am the Lord. And in interpretation, they raise a question, why does this phrase get tacked on to certain commandments? Because other people can't see it. You have to fear the Lord because the Lord is the one that can see whether you're breaking it or not. So, in that case, if you reach that conclusion, you think, well, what about verse 14? Like, I can see if someone curses the deaf or puts a stumbling block in front of the blind. So what follows is that there's more to it than just that. Putting a stumbling block in the blind could be talking also about Lashon Hara. Simply, what you say could be a stumbling block. And the blind, I guess, would be those who didn't know that. But now they have a stumbling block and they're going to trip over it. So there's this dimension that it's referring to actually your speech. Interesting interpretation. And again, it goes back to this concept that God is the one who can see you. This is a very subtle sin, like Lashon Hara. Who's going to judge? Who's going to know if what you're saying is true or not? Or if what you're saying is from false motives? And that's definitely where God has to come in. If you look over another similar, I mentioned it in Leviticus 25, just flip forward to Leviticus 25, verse 17. Here we're also in the context of buying and selling and, you know, what you should do in your field and when someone buys from you. And then, verse 17, it says, Velo tonu ish et amito, ve yareta me'elohecha, ki ani Adonai Elohechem. Slicha, ve'yareta, of course. And you will fear the Lord, or you will fear your God, because I am the Lord your God. So don't, lo tonu, what do you have here? Verse 17.
No one is to oppress his fellow citizen.
Good. Don't oppress.
Or don't deceive is
in Spanish.
Really? They said don't deceive. That's interesting. I mean, the word is literally oppress. Lo tonu. It's not that common of a word. I think I did a check, maybe 19 times in the Bible. But it certainly can be economic oppression. At the same time, people have interpreted it as they read this. Oh, it has that same ending. You will fear the Lord your God. So it means there's something here that can't be seen. So maybe it's more than just, an oppression that I can see on an economic side. And maybe this is also referring to speech. And indeed, in the Baba Metzia 58b in the Talmud, the middle gate, that's right. The middle gate in the Talmud says of this verse, you shall not wrong one another. Okay, that's one way to translate it. It explains that this means saying anything that will insult or anger someone. So do you see that jump? They interpreted oppression to be being speech.
Good job.
Good job. So the way you wrong someone isn't just your economic policy, which of course is a wrong, but it could be your speech, whether it's insulting or angry. And again, this is based on only God can see what's going on here, because that's what he says afterwards. You will fear the Lord. Like, other people may not notice, but I notice. Okay. Okay, and we skipped, I think we didn't read Leviticus 19:12. You can go back to Leviticus 19 now. Let's just go backwards a bit. Did we read that? Velo tishavu vega? No, that's not right.
We stopped at 14. Or 13. We didn't read 14.
Lotasu. Right.
But you talked about it briefly.
Oh, later, verse 17 is what I'm thinking about too. But okay, so we'll get there. So back to verse 15. We read 14, and we mentioned that the deaf and the blind could be taken metaphorically also as the speaker and the listener helping each other violate this commandment of Lashon Hara. Yes.
Can I watch a different movie now?
Maybe, but you're going to have to wait a little bit. Alright. So, verse 15. Don't do avel. Don't do evil. Injustice. Lo tisaf nedal velo tedal pne gadol. Betzedek tishpot amitecha. So, don't do any kind of evil or injustice in your judgment. Don't, you know, show favoritism to the little guy, but then don't play favorites with the big guy either. With justice you'll judge. So it doesn't matter who they are socially. It doesn't matter all of the other things that we, you know, we have stereotypes. We're to make a correct judgment. And then the verse after that is the verse we began this study with. Lo telech rachil be'amecha. You won't go out tale-bearing, or telling tales, or gossiping among your brothers. And you won't stand on someone else's blood. In other words, that could lead to a false witness, which could have serious ramifications, which are similar to murder. And then verse 17. So it's not even just your speech, but listen to this. Lo tisa tisna et achicha bilvavecha. Don't hate your brother in your heart. Hocheach tochiach et amitecha. Go and rebuke him, or kind of like argue with him to correct him. Velo tisa alav het, and you won't bear sin because of him. And then we have our famous verse that we say every week. We don't say the first half. Lo tikom velo titov et bnei amecha. Don't get vengeance. And then the second, ve'ahavta le're'acha kamocha ani Adonai. And you will love the person next to you like yourself, because I'm the Lord. Okay. So all of these laws have been and can be interpreted as referring to kind of the more subtle sins, the speech against people, and even the thoughts in your heart. And the biblical heart, of course, thinks and feels. It's that collective, we might refer to our brain, they refer to their heart. So don't hate your brother in your heart, and don't take vengeance. And even that vengeance and that grudge can certainly be speaking against someone in anger, or like inciting someone else, as we mentioned earlier, that's one of the definitions of gossip. So instead, you're actually supposed to go up to your brother and talk to him. So whether this is talking to the one who's spreading false rumors, or talking to the one you have a problem with, it could be either. And it's interesting, as I mentioned, I was reading online at the Torah.org, and they said part of this mitzvah in Leviticus 19:17 would be stopping Lashon Hara. And then the other part is not to embarrass that person in the process. So the idea is not to grab a Bible and bash it over the person you think is breaking the sin, because then you yourself break the sin, because you're looking at him negatively. And bringing him to shame is just as bad, maybe, as what he's doing. So we have to be very careful how we go to that person as well. And then, of course, loving him as ourselves. Okay. All right, so I just want to look at James 5:6 in closing, because I see we're kind of out of time. We could have also looked at Ezekiel. There's some nice lists combining outward serious sins with some of these inward subtle ones. We'll look at James 5:6. Oh, I'm in James already. Okay, this is in the context of kind of a rebuke. He's talking to believers. He's talking to rich believers. And again, we talked about this oppression being both an economic thing, but possibly other things that would result in something negative in their life. Anyway, oppression, who in the Bible oppresses? It tends to be rich people, because they have the means by which to oppress. Anyway, so James is talking against rich people who are using their riches wrongly. And then the last verse he throws in there, kata dikasate efonevsate ton dikeon uk antitasete umin. So he puts two things together again. What does, who has English for verse 6? What does your text say?
You have condemned, you have murdered the just, he does not resist you.
You have condemned. Interesting, my translation in the, was it the New English Bible, says you have condemned, semicolon, you have murdered. You could say, you could condemn, we often hear in our mind, condemned to murder, that's part of one idiom. But these are two verbs, and I think that they're kind of being equated. And when I was thinking in light of our speech, these two things are being associated, condemning someone. So I'm not thinking in the sense of legally, because I know many of us don't even have an experience where we're brought into court. Maybe you do, but it's condemning someone could be seen as murdering them. Because when you murder, you're taking away someone's life. You're taking away their right to live. And if you condemn them, if your speech somehow is so negative that it could take away something from them, it's not quite on the same level, but in a sense, it is the same spirit. For instance, if you say something that goes against someone's character, and now it leads to them losing their career, you can see how this equation happened between murder. Because if you lose your career, you lose your livelihood, you lose a whole lot. And so I guess what I'm reminded of this morning, this week, is how important it is to watch your speech in both ways. Not just don't lie, which of course we know, but in the more subtle way of don't spread information that could have a negative impact if there's no benefit in it. That is a wrong thing to do. And because we know lying is wrong, you better double check your information. Don't spread disinformation. If you've heard it from someone and you have not verified if that's correct, don't go sharing it. Because what if you're wrong and then you're guilty of sin? And it's a serious sin. God takes it very seriously, just as he takes murder and adultery seriously. What you say has a serious, serious effect. And we're all affecting each other. This is something, you know, other people might do to you, you might do to them. And it's a very practical and a very real thing in our daily lives. So with that, I'll leave you to mull on some of these passages again, and I'm sure we'll hear more downstairs on the parasha. I don't know, did you guys have one of these papers? If you're interested, this is Narcisse's. Well, it's not ours. There's the parashas is the weekly portion that's read in synagogues everywhere. And then it has a haftarah collection from the prophets. But then we like to add a New Testament link to the parasha. So if you've read all the parasha, you kind of have to think about it. But there's often a little link, whether it's verbal or conceptual. So we have that. And then we also just have a Gospel and Acts section if you just want to read through the New Testament. That's more or less in order. Matthew. And it kind of tries to follow the holidays roughly. Matthew, Luke, John. It gets through Gospels and Acts at the same time. Anyway, so these papers are available on our website, narcisse.org. You can download them, and we update them every year. So you can see some of these connections, and you can think about it more. Okay, Shabbat Shalom. Shabbat Shalom.